This is How Was Your Weekend with Wendy and Brian. Look for updates at facebook.com/weekendpodcast or how.ws/yourweekend. While you're there, please subscribe. There are links for iTunes, Android, and more. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Wendy. How's it going?
Good. How was your weekend?
Not bad. I got a chance to go to the North Wilkesboro Zombie Apocalypse. I was a guest.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Maybe more interesting than our topic last week about going to the vet. So how's Charlie doing?
Pretty good. He's a great dumb little dog. I love that guy.
Well, I'm glad he's doing better. And thank you to everybody joining us again this week and following us on facebook.com/weekendpodcast.
And everybody who's also subscribing to us at on iTunes and on all the different platforms where you can get us, like Android and everything.
Well, this weekend's conversation should be very interesting because a zombie apocalypse kind of ties in with what we wanted to talk about this week, which is a book that we both listened to together.
Listened to. Yeah.
We didn't read.
It's an audio book.
Reading's overrated. Just joking. Everybody needs to read. But it was just easier.
Yeah, I tend to like audiobooks. I really like audiobooks. I'm a big fan.
So you recommended this book, which was really great because I didn't know what to expect from it. And I think, you know, I was like, sure, let's listen to this. And so why don't you go ahead and tell the folks what was it that we listened to? And you know, I never asked you, why did you choose to listen to this book?
Okay, great question. So it's a book called The Like Switch. It's by Jack Schaefer, PhD. He is formerly an FBI agent. He was an FBI agent. I wanted to say CIA for a second, but all that runs together for
all
me.
All of it makes them super important and stuff that I think could be really cool.
That's true. So I like, when it comes to audiobooks, a lot of things that I do are around personal and professional development. Like, so that I can be a better person and a better professional. So,
a better version of you, Brian Kilby. A
better version of me.
There you go.
And, like, you know, it's no secret. We mentioned it before. You used to be my boss.
Yes.
And there are, you know, when you're somebody's boss, you have to scrutinize, you know, certain performance things. And
Productively critique. Yes.
And this isn't something that you assigned me to do, but it's something that I took upon myself because I know that I have certain gaps. And one of the gaps that I've always had is, I guess, interacting with people. And it's not that I don't want to, and that's a lie, because sometimes it really is that I just don't want to. But there are certain things I just don't get. And the book goes into how to deconstruct how people interengage and build rapport, and how to replicate — is a terrible way of saying it, but replicate it — utilize the same skills, the same behaviors, to basically get people to like you.
Yeah, it was interesting because I would say, like, the feedback that you and I, you know, whenever we would talk, and whether it was in a business setting or not, or as friends now, you know, it is interesting that watching somebody engage — I'm not super particular when I'm engaging with somebody about how they're interacting with me. I'm more intrigued by it. So it doesn't really change how I choose to interact with them very often. It does probably, and I'm just not aware when it does. But like with you, you know, I'd be like, hey, dude, I'm okay if you don't look me in the eye when you don't talk to me or you fiddle with your phone. But if you're in other meetings with other people that you need them to have a certain perception of you or whatever, you're concerned about a particular person, you know, maybe that's not gonna fly. Or when we became a leader, right, it was like, Brian, if you want these people to take you seriously, just be mindful of these things, because you may not be getting what you want out of them because of how you're, you know, putting up a shield with your computer or whatever random things I gave you feedback on, yeah. Right?
Like, when it comes to certain aspects, like leading a meeting, if I'm leading a meeting and it's me standing up talking, I am really good at that. Mm-hmm. I can do that all day long. I can talk in front of people. I can facilitate a session. I can get people to come to agreement. I can pull whatever out of somebody, but it's that sitting down and talking to one person,
one-on-one,
that just kills me.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't enjoy doing it. It's just that I put so much energy into it and I don't get it back because there's just something that, I mean, like the name says, the like switch, there's a switch that I've yet to figure out how to turn on to actually make people engage. Now, one thing with you and with me, with you, you have lots of friends. Everybody loves you.
I don't know about that.
Like, yes, it's absolutely true. Everybody loves Wendy Kaysen. But like with me, I'm an acquired taste. And it's like, I don't know. It can't just be me. It's something I'm not doing right. And that's why I picked up this book, was to better understand what I'm not doing.
And sometimes too, I think a lot of people like Kilby. Let's just put that straight. I think a lot of people, I think it's who you choose, who you engage with more directly than you being approached by a bunch of different types of people. And I think that just comes down to circumstances.
I don't know.
Our circumstances and who we've run into and why we've had to engage with people. Everybody has different reasons so that, you know, it forms a different way. But I also think you go in with an expectation of how much you want out of each interaction. Everybody does, not just saying you do that, but you look for particular things, and then that is how you choose to move forward with that interaction and that person. And I do the same thing, but in business, and you saw me more in the business world more often, I did it because that was just part of the work that I had to do, and in I engaging and being cross-functional and all this kind of stuff. So it was like I have to be in the space the same way with everybody at any given point. Where if my out of work engagements are not identical, and I would say anybody who sees me in both worlds equally would say that.
Maybe, but one thing I would say that even in an office environment, there is the you leading a meeting, you having to engage with somebody because you're trying to build rapport or you're trying to reach a consensus or an understanding. But they're just also like sitting at your desk.
Yeah.
And when it comes to people wanting to engage, if there was somebody with a ticker checking how many times somebody would come to your desk to want to talk to you versus to me, it'd be a disparity. And that's, again, because there's just something with me that I don't and didn't get.
Yeah.
And this book, I think, has helped me out a lot.
All right, cool. Well, I'm excited to hear what you got out of it. And then I got some things out of it as well. But then I also thought, I was like, wow, he's writing about this thing that seemed very normal to me. But then I stopped myself and went, that's not normal for a lot of people.
Exactly.
Potentially. Yeah.
So exactly.
It was very intriguing to me because I was like, man, this is just like how to be a human. But then I went, maybe no, you write a book because maybe this isn't normal for most people. So it was great. So I want all your takeaways. This is going to be awesome.
So yeah, first and foremost, again, FBI agent. So he used these skills on the job to connect with people that he would be using as a resource or a source of information or to turn on their country.
I was like, ooh, talk about master of manipulation.
I know. So exactly. So it's like the skills or the things that he talks about in this book, you could absolutely utilize for your advantage in situations where it might be best not to use them. And that sounds terrible, but like he described in the book how he had to make friends with terrible people.
Yeah.
And he like really built a connection, but it was an entirely one-way connection. The other person connected to him, but he didn't connect back. He didn't build that rapport with them. He faked it on his end.
Exactly.
To get them to work for him. And I mean, even in the book, he talks about, you know, like, you could use this book with your wife.
Like, yeah, I was like, oh, see, that was the part where I'm like, you can totally misuse this. And then it makes me go, oh man, now I'm going to watch everybody because everybody's full of shit. Just like this guy.
Yes.
Like everybody's the FBI trying to flip people and get their way.
Exactly.
Like, there's so many ways you can take the material and just be like, oh God, you know?
So, yeah. So like the first thing that he talks about, and I won't cover everything. There's really not that many specifics in the book. It's he just emphasizes how he was able to utilize those to manipulate, I guess is the best way to put it.
Well, gain advantage for in his role and in his goals as an FBI agent.
Yes. Less relevant to me, one thing that he described that was very important was proximity. getting being in the same proximity as somebody else to building a comfort level. Not super a super big deal for me, because like if I'm not in your proximity, I don't really necessarily care to engage with you anyway.
Yeah,
that I think that would be more something somebody would use to if they wanted to make a friend or if they wanted to woo somebody. But
yeah, you know what I heard?
What?
Stalker.
Yeah.
I was like, it's so true. But then the way he describes some stuff, I was like, yeah, be there frequently and like a regular time. I'm like, this person's stalking you.
Like the idea of like a sociopath.
Yeah.
Like implementing these skills. And like, I am totally not.
No, you're not.
I would joke at work that I was. You remember that?
Yes, you would. I was like, oh God.
Because in a way I could, if I needed to, put on the charm and get somebody to like me. But it was always very fake.
Yes.
Like I would want to help, you know, again, sort of build like a real relationship, like with somebody. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing that just stuff that didn't even click, he talks a lot about friend signals and foe signals.
Yes.
And it's a lot of things like just, you know, the way you tilt your head, mm-hmm. The angle that you're standing, the kind of words that you use. I realize that I send a lot of foe signals. Like I basically oftentimes, and Kim will say this, she told me this yesterday, I have oftentimes major resting bitch face.
Okay, well, we have this in common, because what did everybody make fun of me on the team for?
RBF.
Yes, but he refers to it as...
I don't remember.
Urban scowl.
Urban scowl. Oh, yes. Oh, it, yeah, he that's a photo of it, RBF,
yeah.
Right there.
Yes, that's... yeah, and it's... And you know what? I get it. Like, do I do it when I'm like... I do it because I'm super concentrating, or I'm under the gun with something, or I'm super, super focused. Never is it to like deter anything. But I think subconsciously it's like, I don't need to be bugged because I am in a rush somewhere with a lot on my mind to take care of something in a short amount of time. And I never realized how bad it was until the team was like, dear God, woman. And I wouldn't say that you have just a very much like focused look.
Yeah. So I'm going to quote a favorite movie of ours. Like, I don't go around, you know, laughing all day like an idiot or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, I'm happy, but, you know, I don't necessarily always present that on my face, because that's just not how I think to articulate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it's like basically just smile at people. He goes into this thing called like the eyebrow flash.
Yeah.
Which, when you look at it in photos, looks so creepy.
It does. When he does the pictures that he shows, I'm like, these poor people, that they're like, here, make this face so we can take a photo.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's basically like when you smile at somebody, don't fake it.
Yeah.
Give a genuine smile. How do you do a genuine smile? One, you know, what I've always done, is I would think about something that would make me happy.
Oh, okay.
I would like,
you put more effort and thought into it than me then. 'Cause I'm bad about not the fake smile, but like not the whole, I know you and I'm happy to see you smile. Like if I'm just meeting somebody or I'm kind of first engaging, I don't do the show your teeth smile. I do the like, like turn the corners of your mouth,
yeah.
Up, but it's like, I don't know you and I don't know if I'm that excited to see you. Like I analyzed that by reading that. I was like, okay, I don't do the full genuine smile all the time. Like I'll, you know, probably raise my eyebrows and make that kind of weird closed lip smile face.
Yeah.
But that's probably, people are like, well, that chick's got problems.
It sounds like you could use the book, Wendy.
I learned some stuff, Kilby. I was very, very impressed with some of the things I had to say.
So like people may be listening to this and like, well, that's obvious. It wasn't to me.
Yeah, that's the you know, that's what I had to remind myself. I'm like, oh yeah, well duh, you know. But then I also saw, when you reflect on it and you think about yourself, right? I was like, oh, yeah, I intentionally do some of these things because I don't want that attention, or I don't want that relationship, or I don't want that engagement with that particular person or that situation or whatever it might be. And it's become very subconscious and it just happens. So now I'm probably going to be paranoid constantly being like, did I do an eyebrow flash? Did I?
Like, I don't know if I've ever done an eyebrow flash. But there are things that I do notice in the course of a conversation now after reading this. Like, one big one is, I never even thought about this. It's kind of like how I fidget all the time.
Yep.
But like if you're having a conversation with somebody, it's not uncommon to like pick up like your drink or whatever.
Oh,
if,
the cup if, positioning.
Like, yeah, if the cup is between you, pick it up, drink, take a drink, and set it to the side. It's not that you are even consciously doing it, but you are freeing space between you and the person that you're engaging with.
Because you want it.
Yeah, and it's showing rapport.
Yep.
I never thought about that.
Neither did I. It was just a natural thing. So I think a lot of the stuff that he went over were natural things that we do out of our, you know, our respect for the person already or the engagement, whatever's going on. But we didn't realize that it was part of this analysis or ability. Like we can, not manipulate's a bad word, but we can use it to our advantage or in a better way than we were using it today to build better relationships or change the core, you know, change the dynamic of a discussion or something like that. That cup positioning thing I thought was really interesting.
Like I was having a conversation with our friend Stacy, and I realized in the course of it that I had whatever I had and I set it to the side just after like picking it up to drink it. And I'm like, holy crap, I just did that.
You see? Yeah, now I'm going to be walking around watching people completely differently. I'm going to be judging every time I'm having an engagement. I'm going to have to be careful.
Another one that I really like is the head tilt.
Oh, I'm a head tilter.
I don't know if I am. I don't think I am. But what's interesting is he points out that that's a universal gesture, like throughout like mammals in general.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Your dog does a
head
tilt.
Your dog does it. It's
Forrest Gump did it.
Yes. It's like eye contact and things like that. Those are things that just universally animals do.
Yep.
I never even think about it.
Yeah, it is. And I think, I mean, I do. I just think it ties into the humanness or that connectivity piece. Like they say, regardless of to what level, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, everybody, animal, human alike, want engagement with something or someone at any point in their life. And so it's just how they engage and what they do is very interesting to learn. I think the cup placement and the foot placement and the all sorts of that stuff, I was like, that's really interesting, because the body language thing he spent time on, not as much as I thought he might, but I thought that was interesting too. And like how people use, so when I think of, I can't remember what he referred to it as, but we would always talk about, because you liked to take notes and do things on your computer, but sometimes you weren't doing it, but it'd be open. And it was like, it was a shield. Like, yeah. It was a block. It could turn people off from sharing more or, you know, like you said, getting a reaction or getting more information or whatever you needed out of that person because you had a shield in front of you. And, you know, he talked about people holding pillows or folding their arms and, you know, all that other kind of stuff to show closed off or a certain barrier. That kind of was like, I've heard that before, but he went into it in a whole different angle, which I thought was really interesting. And when you work like in a work environment, that's just almost an immediate tripwire, because you're in a meeting with your computer open, you know. And then he got into the whole thing about the digital, like how digital has changed the ability to communicate and interact and stuff like that. So I would love to hear, Mr. I Love My Phone, what you thought about his perspective on digital, the internet, texting, all of that, and how you think that may help or put you at a disadvantage.
So, you know, I am very content being alone, mm-hmm. and focusing on things I want to focus on. But like you said, everybody and everything wants some level of interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So like some level of friendship. And I've noticed before, like maybe I'll be like, oh gosh, in a long series of meetings, I have to be working on a project for a month. And we are talking very much in terms of business, but that's really, this applies to anything.
Anything, yeah.
Anything. But I think that's where I am most comfortable speaking in terms of business,
mm-hmm.
Which is funny enough. I do another podcast about role-playing games, and that's the whole context of the show, is it's from a business perspective. But so I'll notice that I may be in two or three months working on a project, and there's a couple of people on the project team, and then like two people will really connect, or somebody else will really connect. And I'm like, I kind of feel left out. And was it FOMO?
FOMO, fear of being, missing out.
Used to tell me that about my FOMO, major FOMO. And it's kind of like the phone or the computer, which I was constantly looking at, in a way was a shield to, one, protect myself.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of how not intentionally used it, but it was also a barrier, like you said, to keep people from actually really... from really connecting with you.
But in the same then on the other hand, you're like, but man, they never include me, right?
Yes.
It's just an interesting, yeah. It's very interesting.
It's because it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. That's right.
These are not things that I just naturally understand. Some people absolutely do.
Don't get me wrong, there's so much in that book that I was like, oh God, so take me out of the work environment. And I was like, yep, I completely do that stuff out in public outside of the business atmosphere. And people would be like, well, why is Wendy being so quiet? And she's kind of guarded and standing off in this kind of scenario versus what I would normally see. Like, I think you also, those two environments are different too. Your public personal out there versus maybe in your business or what it is ever you're doing for your career, things that... your relationships are for a certain purpose here, and then you're out in the world and engaging with a different scenario that's out of your control. Maybe you don't know where it's going, or you're walking into life differently out in the public, right, than you are when you walk in the office and you're like, this is what I'm here to do today.
I like when you say out of your control. So when it's just me,
yeah,
that is 1000% entirely within my control.
Yeah.
But when you factor in somebody else.
Yep.
The unknown. It no longer becomes that. So you mentioned the zombie apocalypse that I was at this weekend.
Yeah, let's talk about communication skills and liking zombies. How did you know if a zombie liked you this weekend?
You don't. But like, so I was there to, I guess, cover the event in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a couple of videos where I'm talking about the event, and Kim said, well, why don't you go talk to somebody?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I don't want to.
I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll do that here in a minute. And like every single time, I kept waiting for like openings. It's kind of like I was trying to jump off a train. It's kind of like I'm waiting for like a soft spot to like land on. I never quite saw that comfort zone to jump off into, so I never did.
But the major question here, like on top of that just being maybe a difficult thing in real life, how do you just go strike up a conversation with a zombie Brian Gilby? I really want to know.
That's a great question. So,
because do they even really talk?
I will be honest with you. The couple of instances where I engaged with somebody who was in costume was silent. I just like gestured, like I had my camera. I sort of shook it like a camera, and I pointed at them. And then
nonverbal.
Yes, and they can speak through the mask.
Yeah, I know.
But I just opted not to engage with them that way.
Uh-huh.
So, it's like when I'm out at a convention and people recognize me and stop me and want to talk to me. I am so incredibly awkward in those situations. It's funny because...
But you know what he says in the book. So what did you learn in the book that like should totally make those more comfortable?
Remind me.
So when he says you're trying to engage with somebody you don't know, right? Or it's somebody that you have something in common with that person already, right? They know you. You have common interests. You're at the same thing. So the conversation should be, I can focus it around the like topic and it should be easier for you. And then you can, you know, move on your way as you want to, as opposed to being like, who is this person? And I don't want to talk to them. You could be like, oh yeah.
You're exactly right.
But it doesn't make it easier. I understand that.
I don't have a good answer for you.
But you don't have to.
Like I should just naturally want to take up and start up a conversation with somebody.
But, I don't, some days.
Yeah, exactly.
Some days I don't.
But especially so, but like in my convention example, like I'll go to a toy convention and people will know me from all the podcast stuff. And people who like are my listeners, my core audience, people who I am so very appreciative for, people who've listened to me for years, they're people who've listened to me for
They've known you since you were a tadpole.
They've known, like, there are kids who have listened to me growing up.
Yeah.
You know, like, who are like adults now.
Yeah.
It's not odd in the sense. I'm super happy that that happens, that those people are out there. I love them for it. But also, it's just like, you know, I don't know why anybody would want to listen to me for that. But it's like they feel that they have a relationship with me and they know me because they've listened for so long.
But they don't know you the way you feel comfortable engaging with them.
And I can't return that level of familiarity with them because I don't have that same intimacy from a communication standpoint. Like I've told, like I share a lot. When I say I share a lot, I mean, I don't, it's not like, oh, well, I had to go to the bathroom, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like I, in a way, very, very serious way, I live a very public life.
Yeah.
But that's a one-way communication.
It's one topic. It's a particular part of your entire being.
Yeah, and it's really hard to, especially those people, to build that kind of conversation that's fulfilling for them because it comes off as superficial because I can't return that familiarity with them.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
Yeah. I could understand that. See, it's hard being popular, isn't it, buddy?
I guess so.
It's hard being you and being famous.
But the thing is, where that happens, like, outside of my sphere that I actually live in, inside of my sphere, it's very much not that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was just intriguing because there were so many parts. And then when he did talk about the digital piece and how much. So to your point now, right? These people think they know you. They feel very connected to you.
And they do.
And they know that, but they know that part of you. They don't know Brian Kilby and all that encompasses Brian Kilby.
Who knows everybody in every single way that encompasses them?
I mean, you and Kim, you know, it's like there's probably one person in everybody's life, if they have a spouse or whatever, there's might one person that could get to, let's say, 80% of who that person is. But it's not going to be this big core of people. Like, to your point. So it's very interesting, though, that even, you know, and people feel more comfortable communicating via a digital device or something like that. And then because of that interaction, when they meet face to face, they feel like, oh, I can talk to this person just like I know him. And it's not the same. Like, digital communication has not replaced the reality of what it is to engage in a conversation and have a relationship with a person, like flesh and bone.
You don't think texts have replaced the phone in that respect? Even the phone's not personal, but
but it's got so much you can read into it the wrong way. Like, so Allison and I have this conversation all the time, right? Like, people say you're a bad texter. I'm like, how can you be a bad texter? Like, but there's so much that's lost in that communication. And he says it in the book, right? Word traps or word tripping or
yes.
Something like that, right? If you are trying to be sarcastic, unless the person knows you or has been communicating with you through text message in many ways and you've worked through those things as friends, there's so much that can be misinterpreted in text messaging still because you don't see their face. You don't see their body language. You don't. You know, you have to know somebody really well to know if they're being a wise ass or if they're just being an ass, you know, and text messaging. So though I think it's replaced the telephone call and things in that nature, I don't think that it's better than having a face-to-face conversation or a phone call if you have something important to talk about or have a real conversation about.
So for me, considering I still want to have that engagement, but I don't have emotional energy to give to like a real deep conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, like, honestly, it could even be, I guess it's just a fear of not being able to capture someone else's interest or live up to expectations. Like, if somebody comes over and wants to talk to me about something,
you don't want to see them disappointed when they leave the conversation.
Yeah, and like, you know, honestly, sometimes I worry about that a lot.
Oh yeah.
So one thing I like about texts is that I can have sort of a superficial conversation, but still have a conversation.
Yeah.
And that was something I only recently learned. I've only become a texter in the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years.
You and me both. Like, I used to just use it as a means of notification or just to check in. But to have, like, back and forth conversations over days and things like that with people, I've gotten to that more. But I still, there's still a lot. And some of my friends who I text with regularly will tell you there's times where they want a story or they want to be updated about something. And I'm like, I'll tell you when we're in person, because I am like, what I want them to hear me say is not going to come through on a text message.
I get that.
So those are things I still, like, there's a lot where I'm like, okay, either the topics, A, I have way too much to say and I don't want to type this shit out. Or I am like, this really is a face-to-face conversation so that they can see how excited I am about it, or they can really laugh at the story that's in what they're asking me about. You know, it's like that. I think it, text messaging can strip away the enjoyment of the conversation and the excitement that somebody wants to hear about. Like, they reach out to you because they want to hear about it. That doesn't come across in a text message.
So I'll say,
I don't care if you are a freaking world-class text messenger, and I still don't think that there is a scale of texting, but if there is, somebody let us know.
I'll say this. That's the case for us because we are a specific age.
Yes, probably. Yeah, that's true. We didn't grow up on it. That's true.
I think if you grew up with speaking to friends primarily like in chat or in text,
mm-hmm.
I think that it's as valid a way of communicating as any other.
I suck at it then. I am a bad texter.
No, you're not a native texter.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
I think
that's a fancy title for it. I'm a non-native.
It's like, I didn't have a computer till I was an adult.
Yeah.
So I didn't have access to like the internet or anything up until I was nearly 20.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of things that I had to learn. I've learned, because I would say most people would consider me pretty savvy with that stuff.
Yes, but, absolutely.
But there are certain, a lot, most folks, you know, kids coming up today, people 10 years younger than us, I mean, that there's a fluency in it that I think that most people our age don't achieve. I am only by the most liberal of scales, liberal of scales would be considered an older millennial. Anything, 99% of scales would consider me a Gen Xer.
Mm-hmm.
But like the way that I interact when it comes to looking at my phone and stuff, a lot of people, I see myself in a lot of ways more as millennial than,
I agree,
than like Gen Xer, because I did a little bit of the telephone thing, talking to people.
Do you Snapchat?
I do not Snapchat.
I'm
so not a millennial. But I did do a lot of typing and just writing when I was a kid. So
yeah.
I tend to think in terms of more of the way that I write than the way that I speak.
Yes, that makes sense. I just think it's it is interesting, and I do think, you know, yeah, the younger generations, you make a valid point. They're used to that. That's a comfortable thing to them, and they can connect on a level and interpret things that I still am like, I think this is silly. I'd just rather stand and have the conversation with you. And partly because for me, it's I can read their reaction, I think. Because I like, you know me, it's not that I like to read people for, it's just entertaining for me. I like to see if I can figure people out. I like to see if I can engage with them differently to make them comfortable. Like, I like that stuff.
And going back to the book, it's a lot of the social cue stuff. So I want to take a minute to talk about some of my favorite social cues.
Oh my God, let's do this. Like, this is going to be awesome, because these pictures, of the book, the pictures are horrible.
So, I've seen people who don't even realize they do this stuff, like the eye roll.
Yeah, who does? Oh, yep.
Like, just like you may have one impression of somebody, but if they're talking to you and they do an eye roll, they just immediately become a douchebag, and they're never going to, you know, be anything but a douchebag.
Yeah, that's true.
And one that I never even realized, but it's a hair flip. They call it the bitch flip.
Oh, I didn't know.
It wasn't like the normal hair flip where you're talking to somebody. It's just like it's like an angry hair flip.
It's kind of the one where you like kind of tuck your hand on your neck for a minute and then you kind of move your hair. It's not the real happy, smiley, tilt your head flip.
Yeah.
But I don't do either one of those, but I've experienced the bitch flip of somebody who just is dismissive.
Yeah. So you realize that a lot of times people, and I don't know what to ascribe to them. Is it the fact that they just are so they lack so much EQ, or that
they're having a bad day.
They could be having a bad day, but if it's a repeated thing.
No, this is true. Yeah. I mean, like, repeatability.
Like, I've had bad days, and, you know, I typically fake it.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of people, I think, just do a really poor job of communicating and aren't wired so that they hold certain thoughts back in. Certain people can't hold. Certain people have no poker face.
Oh, yeah, I don't.
But, yeah, you don't.
I don't have one at all.
You don't.
I can't even try. It's all over my face.
But I didn't realize, like, you know, crossing arms. I don't really think of crossing. I think of crossing arms. I think you have to have a certain look on your face before that becomes a
thing. Because, you know, in some environments, somebody's just freezing their tail off and that they're trying to keep warm. It's not that they're not interested in what you have to say.
I guess these are also would be considered the faux signals, too, that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, like crossing the arms, just yawning, being tired. Even not less of a faux signal, but just a signal in general. Somebody trying to back away. We do that all the time.
Yes. Yes.
And it's just a way of, disengaging from a conversation. Maybe you got somewhere to go. One that always got me was looking at your watch.
Oh yeah.
Cause I would just always do that
even a lot of people don't wear watches anymore and we still do it.
Yep.
Like even, yeah, that's the thing where I've been like, oh, I gotta go. And I look at, like, now I have a watch, but for a long time I didn't wear one. And I was like, oh, wow, I really just did that and I don't even have a watch on my wrist. So what an ass.
Before we stop this, I want to mention one thing, because this is a big deal for some people, and I honestly don't know. Touching.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Like,
I do that.
Like,
when I'm comfortable with somebody, when I've known them for a while, and I read that. I'm a shoulder, come up, how you doing, like, the hand plant on the top of the shoulder person.
Yes.
And I did that to you, and I remember going, oh God, I know Brand doesn't like
that. I'm fine with it.
Now.
I'm totally fine with it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. The touching thing, I would have to be somebody that I was comfortable with.
Yeah.
One. Or two, like, it sends like a mixed signal if you don't know the person.
Yes.
Like, especially, I mean, guys just tend to think this anyways. Like, oh, is this person
hitting
just
on me?
Is this person, like, it's like all guys think that.
Yeah.
So, like, if somebody that I hardly knew did a touch thing,
yes,
or somebody that I barely knew is like, you know, hey, I'm married. Don't you do that?
Yeah.
But I had a friend at work that she was definitely a toucher, and she was a grabber.
Oh.
She would grab your arm and hold it.
Oh yeah.
And she did this in front of Kim once. This was like nearly 10 years ago. Kim still, like, shoots daggers when she sees this person.
Get her, Kim.
It's funny. It's funny. She has never gotten over that.
I am not normally like a touchy person. It's as I become comfortable or like, and I'm not like weird touchy, like you just said, you know, I'm like, you and all, like, the men on the team, right? I would just go up and do, like, the hand plant on the top of the shoulder. What's going on, buddy? You know, but I'm one of those, don't touch me. If I don't know you, don't. If we shook hands, introductions, whatever. But, yeah, don't touch me unless you know me. Because it's going to be really uncomfortable. And then I immediately go into the, what the hell do you want from me?
So, you mentioned a handshake. Like, I am very proud of my handshake.
You got a good firm handshake.
I was in a meeting with somebody I never met before a couple weeks ago, and I shook their hand, and they're like, that's a good handshake. And I smiled. Yeah. So I was talking to somebody, a group of a couple people, and Stacy asked me about my handshake. And I'm like, well, I can shake your hand. So
she's like, why is it so special?
Yeah. And I shook her hand, and she thought that I was trying to break her hand.
Because you have a firm handshake.
I have a very firm handshake. It's something I'm very proud of. It's something that, you know, that I think every man should have a firm handshake.
Let me flip the tables. Because I have a firm handshake.
Yes,
I don't do the polite, proper female handshake. Like, and when guys do the, like, grab your finger, that pisses me off. I'm like, you can shake my hand like a normal person and you're not going to break me. But I do. I think I probably have a little bit of an intimidating handshake for a female, because most guys are like, ah, but I grew up, you know, around a bunch of hardworking blue collar men and stuff like that. And they didn't pamper and do the whole, you know, and that, I will tell you, I'm not speaking for all females, but if you are in a position as a female where you're on a level playing field with men, you're in the same positions, you're talking about the same things, you're working towards a common goal, and there's an introduction, a general normal handshake means more to me than you. If you go in and you may be thinking you're a gentleman and that's how you were raised, and I respect that. I'm not going to tell somebody to change their ways if that's they were raised that way for as a respect. But when they do that, my perception of that person changes very much. Like, they aren't treating me as an equal. Like, I can shake your hand just like anybody else. So I probably tend to have a very firm, unnecessarily firm handshake. It's so good you brought that up. But nobody's complimented me on mine.
I get compliments.
See, dang. I'm going to take some. I'm going to take some lessons.
So yeah. How about we sort of summarize what we talked about this week? So The Like Switch is a pretty awesome book.
I think it's good. I think it's interesting, and it evokes a lot of thought about maybe things you want to fix, maybe things you want to be aware of. And people watching, it will enhance people watching, which I love to
absolutely do. And if you're a sociopath, you could do evil things with God, it.
Just please don't. We don't need any of those in the world.
But like, again, the reason that I wanted to read the book was to better understand what I'm not doing right, because I recognize that I'm not doing something right.
And I don't know if it's that you're doing anything wrong, but you know how you can make the situation more comfortable and what you want it to be.
Yes.
Right. And
yes.
You're not doing anything wrong. It's just you want a better result for yourself.
I want a better result, and I want to feel that I'm getting out of something that I'm putting into it.
Personal development. I'm proud of you, Brian Kilby. This was awesome. I'm really glad you suggested this, because I learned things, and it made me open my mind and consider things a little bit differently about interactions.
Yeah, maybe in the future we could talk about another book.
I think we should.
I've got a ton.
Awesome. Let's start clipping off the list.
Hey, so what are we talking about next week?
So May is a huge month for graduations, right? I don't know what it is about May, and it's like graduation as a word, as a term, but you think about things you graduate in life, becoming a mother. Mother's Day is in May. High school graduations, college graduations, all that kind of stuff. But we're going to talk about my trip to Kansas for high school graduation.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. So stay tuned.
I'm looking forward to that. So everybody out there, please, please, please subscribe. It would make our day. You can find us on iTunes, on Google Play Music. Go to basically our website, which is How Was Your Weekend. That's HOWW.AS/YourWeekend. And from there, once you're looking at one of our shows, at the bottom of it, we're going to have links where you can, you know, subscribe. That would be awesome. And tell a friend.
Tell a friend, because guess what? I just want 5 more people to like us maybe in the next week.
That'd be awesome.
I have some small goals, but if 5 more people like me this week, I'll feel better about myself.
Me too. I'll feel better about you too.
Oh, yeah, good. I'm glad. I need somebody to feel better about me.
Yeah, but word of mouth is the number one way that people find new podcasts. It's how I find new podcasts.
We've enjoyed it, and we've enjoyed you guys giving us your feedback. So please continue that and like us.
Awesome. I guess we'll see you next week.
See you next weekend.
Have a good one.
Bye. This was How Was Your Weekend with Wendy and Brian. Please subscribe at our website, howwas/yourweekend. That's HOWW.AS/yourweekend. Please leave a review and tell a friend.